Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey everyone, thanks so much for joining me once again today. Always a pleasure to have you with me, and we have a repeat guest today who's brought us so much great information. She is Cynthia Flynn from Hackler Flynn & Associates, a law firm in Los Angeles, and they deal with a lot of business owners, of course. And one of the things that's always in change are employment laws in the state of California. So she's going to bring us up to date on some of those updated and recent developments in employment law. So, Cynthia or Cindy, how are you doing? Welcome to the show again today.
I'm great. Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for having me again.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We've gotten a lot of great comments from your information. It's great for our listeners to be able to hear directly from professionals who are practicing every day, and that's you. So, what's happening with your firm? How are things going in your life?
Everything is going great. You know, I run an employment law firm. We actually just moved offices. So we're in Pasadena now. We have an office in Pasadena and we have an office in Irvine. And we're just continuing to grow and stay up to date with all the new employment laws that are coming out for 2020.
That's terrific. There are always a lot of changes. And you're going to bring us up to date on a few of those new changes in California employment law. So let's get started. What's new in California employment law?
So one of the biggest things that came down recently is what's known as AB 5. And it's a new California law that codifies the independent contractor standard set by the California Supreme Court in Dynamex with some new exceptions. And last time I was on the show, I believe I was, you know, talking a lot about Dynamex and how it is affecting pretty much every business that has independent contractors. Independent contractors are a thing of the past. But specifically with AB 5, which was just signed into law on September 18th, you know, a couple weeks ago, there are, you know, a couple key provisions that I wanted to touch on.
Great.
And the first is AB 5, which enacts, you know, as law, the ABC test for independent contractors, which was set forth last year in Dynamex. So that is now law. And under this standard, which is, you know, what we kind of talked about last time a little bit, an employer seeking to classify a worker as an independent contractor must prove A, B, and C of this test. And part B of the test is really where businesses are and continue to get in trouble. Part B says that the work performed is outside the hirer's usual course of business. So, you know, if I'm in the business of making cars and I have someone helping me with that process, they need to be a employee of the business rather than an independent contractor. So, important to note.
Okay. Wait, let's go back on that one. So what you're saying is that I didn't quite get that. So the independent contractor that you hire has to work for someone else?
No. The independent contractor, in order to prove that the worker is properly classified as an independent contractor, the employer has to meet this test, A, B, and C. And part B is the issue where more businesses are having trouble. And part B of the test says that the worker is performing work that is outside the hirer's usual course of business. So if the usual course of business is building widgets and you're having somebody come in and help you build widgets, there's not a way around making them an independent contractor unless, you know, it's one of the exceptions, which we'll note with AB 5.
So defining that in the business, if they make a component of the widget,
mm-hmm.
if you will,
right?
Are they in the widget business or the mallet head business for the widget? I'm picturing everybody has their own picture of a widget.
Yeah, it just depends if the work is performed outside the business owner's usual course of business. And so, you know, if it's part of a piece that you're selling and you are having that person work on that particular piece of the widget, the mallet head or whatever it is, they likely need to be an employee of that business.
Okay, let's talk about like a service business like an Uber, who's would they have to redefine what business they're in because they're, what do they sell, convenience and technology or a ride somewhere? And the individuals that are driving are providing rides. How does something like that shake out, do you think?
Yep, Uber is, I mean, with California signing this into a law and it going to effect next year, it's really, you know, hitting the gig economy. And Uber's been making the argument from day one that they are a platform in which they connect drivers and riders. But that argument is slowly being deteriorated. But Uber has a lot of funds to fight the fight. You know, what worries me is the small businesses, you know, who don't have $100 million to make this argument and fight the fight.
Wow. It sounds very like it's going to be very complicated and it's going to keep a lot of attorneys busy for a long, long time as they fight. You know, what are the fine definitions of those of that test? Just out of curiosity, what was Part A and Part C, if you don't mind giving us a brief overview on that?
Yes, of course. Of course. So Part A of the test says that the worker is free from the hirer or the employer's control and direction. So that, you know, going back to the basics of independent contractor relationship, that the worker has, you know, control and direction over the work being performed. Part C of the test says that the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, business of the same nature as the work performed for the hire. And the issue is that under Dynamex, you need to prove A, B, and C. And now under AB5, you have to prove A, B, and C if you want to make the argument that someone is an independent contractor who's working for you.
Wow, they're making it sounds like so complicated that at some point the small business owner is just basically going to, at some point they're going to throw up their hands and go, we give up, right? I mean, that sounds like what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, it's definitely having an effect on the small and medium-sized businesses who, you know, I think are doing one of the best jobs for society by hiring people so that they can provide, you know, shelter and for their families and food on the table, and it's really hitting them hard.
Yeah, that's the fabric of our society, and certainly as things pile on, it erodes the margins, and then they have a difficult time competing. So what are some of the other laws that are business owners need to watch out for now?
Well, I just wanted to touch on one more thing with AB5, because it specifically lists several professions that are exempt, which actually helps the small business and medium-sized business. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but lawyers, of course, have a carve-out. We write a lot of the laws, so it makes sense. So if you're a lawyer and you're hiring another lawyer, they can properly be classified as an independent contractor, even if they are doing the same type of law that you're practicing. Others, you know, include other licensed professionals, private investigators, engineers, architects, accountants, all of those are exempt. there are certain medical practitioners, because we were wondering what was going to happen in that field. A lot of doctors who work in hospitals are considered independent contractors, and they are exempt. And, you know, registered or licensed security brokers are also exempt. Commercial fishermen, which we probably don't have a lot of those listening in right now. But so there are a couple notable exemptions.
And forgive me if I didn't hear it mentioned, but construction?
I did not mention construction, but yes, construction is part of that as well.
Oh, that's good, because there's an awful lot of that going on, right? A lot of contractors and construction that hire other people to help them out on a specialty area. Okay.
Right, right. And, you know, there are a separate set of professions which are exempt from the ABC test and AB5, but the employer may still be liable for misclassification. And these include marketing professionals, human resources, travel agents, graphic designers, grant writers, freelance writers, and barbers, cosmetologists in those areas. So even though you may be exempt from the ABC test of Dynamex and AB5, you could still be liable for a misclassification of an employee versus an independent contractor. So if you're in one of those professions, just be careful and talk to your local employment attorney.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, should people talk to their attorney now, or should they play it by ear, and then if they get in trouble, call their attorney? What's the better route for most of our listeners?
You know, we are big proponents of calling early. If you think you're going to have an issue, or if you're in one of the businesses described, you know, just to get that stamp of approval that you're moving forward in the right direction, because this anxiety is generally what keeps business owners up at night. It's either short on cash or you're going to be sued. So if your lawyer can help you in just a few minutes on just easing any concerns of, you know, let's get these people paid correctly and let's make sure all of your documents are in order, you know, that's what we like to do. Earlier is better than later, especially if the person's still working for you. You know, you can have them sign releases, you can have them sign waivers, all sorts of things which go back to protecting the business owner.
Like the old Mr. Goodwrench commercial, pay me now or pay me later. What are some of the pains? What are some of the penalties for not complying and then being found out some point down the road?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. A couple more things just in regards to the misclassification issue between employers or employees and independent contractors. AB5 says that employers are forbidden from reclassifying workers who were employees as independent contractors as of January 1st, 2019. So that's interesting to know. You don't want to just start making changes without talking to your employment lawyer. And then to top it all off, AB5 provides criminal penalties for companies who violate the law, and it allows the state to bring civil lawsuits for violations of that law. So you have a lot at stake. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What could it, I mean, criminal penalties, I understand that. What could it be financially? Is there, like in a lot of situations, like Department of Labor issues, they have, look, this will cost you X dollars per day per employee for as long as it's been going on if we catch you. Is there anything like that built in?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, the statutes call for all sorts of waiting time penalties, and just like if someone is classified as an independent contractor and they should have been an employee, then they were misclassified, and then the door just opens for all sorts of penalties associated with that, such as when did they get their final paycheck? If they didn't get it on their last day worked, you owe a penalty for every day since then for up to 30 days, right? And then
Right.
You also need to take into account the breaks and lunches, and it just gets very, very steep for business owners.
Right.
In fact, you know, we just had a case and it was a very small case, and our client hired a photographer for one day. He does branding and marketing for all sorts of businesses. And he decided, you know, oh, I need a photographer just for one day. I'm going to pay a flat fee of $500. You know, he's never hired this photographer before. This is the only time she worked for him. And she worked all day. You know, she ended up working like a 10, 11-hour day. And he, you know, she invoiced him $500 for her services. Well, my client, you know, has a great heart, but he just forgot to pay the invoice. And she reminded him like 2 or 3 weeks later. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I've been out of town. You know, I have a sick family member. I will get to it. I apologize for the delay. And another couple weeks went by and she decided, I'm going to file a labor commissioner complaint against him. And she claimed she was an employee. She claimed that she was never paid for her services and that she never got a lunch break that day. She never got her two breaks. And the labor commissioner ended up saying, he had no employee handbook. And the labor commissioner told him that he owes her $16,000 for this violation.
Because in effect, that was her last day of work, and she was not paid on that date, and that carried over, including, oh, my gosh, wow.
$16,000 for a $500 invoice. It made me so sick. I really want him to appeal this, but then again, you know, he's going to be spending more time and effort and attorney's fees. And AB5, he just got that window of, you know, Dynamex was passed, but 85 is not into effect, but he should be safe come January 1st of 2020. And he just got caught in this like terrible situation to where he missed paying a $500 invoice. She takes him to the labor board and now he has $16,000. So
$500 to $16,000. That'll get your attention in a hurry. And that's one employee. For one day.
Right.
So, you know, listeners, this is the point. This is the point. You can't ignore these types of things and think that that it's going to go away. There are a lot of laws that you need to be aware of. You need somebody on your side. And again, Hackler Flynn and Associates, that's what they do on a day-to-day basis. So, Cynthia, you do a great job with bringing those things up. Hey, do me a favor. We're running a little short on time. That was a great overview.
Sure.
On that area. Tell our listeners what are some of the most interesting things they'll find on your website that they should go there right now and look at. Are there guides, overviews? What's at your website?
Definitely. We are always publishing blogs. So follow us on LinkedIn or Facebook. We are telling stories about the new laws that are coming out, things that business owners can be on the lookout for, things to protect themselves early on. We also have a mailing address or mailing email list if anyone wants to sign up for that. You know, we definitely do not spam you, but anytime something, you know, that I feel is very specific to business owners running small and medium-sized businesses that comes out, where that's going to come out, we want to update our clients and let them know. And so if anyone's interested in that, you can find a link on our website to sign up for our mailing list.
You know, what's interesting about what you do is that you're on the side of the business owner, but the laws are constantly changing. So keeping up to date simply and easily could not be a bad thing for a business owner. So it's Hackler, H-A-C-K-L-E-R, Flynn, F-L-Y-N-N, law.com, HacklerFlynnLaw.com. And I know, Cindy, that you're a member of Vistage and you're a member of ProVisors, both groups that help business owners and network amongst other professionals. So you can be a lot of value for your clients as well when they're thinking about other things. Besides visiting their website, is there another next best way for them to get in touch with you?
You know, you can always call our office. It's 323-247-7030. If you mention, you know, that you heard us on this radio program, Exit Coach Radio, I'm happy to give, you know, a free consultation to anyone who calls or emails us. And then anyone can always email me as well. And my email address is just Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at HacklerFlynnLaw.com. And, you know, I'm putting together a list of updates for 2020. If anyone emails me and wants that list of just the basic laws that you need to know about for 2020, please email me, and I'm happy to share that with you.
Really great stuff. Cindy, thank you so much for coming on once again, and you're always welcome back because you always have some fresh content to talk to us about, and really appreciate you joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Fun.
And thank you, listeners. Thanks for joining me. My next guest is Kathleen McEntee, and she's also a repeat guest. She's been with us several times, Kathleen McEntee and Associates in La Quinta. That's in the desert, if you don't know. That's in California. But she's from Chicago. She's the founder and president of Kathleen McEntee and Associates Limited, which is a full-service marketing firm that provides support to privately held businesses. And she has over 30 years of experience in marketing, communications, sales, and business development, operations, media, public relations, C-level client relations, you name it. So she works with clients to help them best articulate who they are, what they do, and most importantly, what distinguishes them from their competition. And then she develops and executes the plan to get the message right to the audience in the right places. Again, Kathleen's a native of Chicago. She resides in the Coachella Valley, beautiful place in the desert in the Inland Empire, or I guess Coachella Valley is unto itself, beyond the Inland Empire. Her passion is international travel. She's visited six continents and the cultures that make our world rich. Kathleen, I don't know if there's anything else to say except welcome to the show again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate the return invitation.
Well, it's when I hear interesting content from guests, I always want to get them back. And your information that we've talked about in the past about, again, all this branding, marketing, is always of interest to our listeners. So tell us what you'd like to talk about today. I'd love to dig into the topic with you.
I thought, you know, you mentioned provisors in your last interview with Cindy, and we had a topic not too long ago that I thought was pretty good, and we asked everybody what was on their desk, because, you know, it's really kind of hard to explain what you do, and I thought I'd kind of give you a preview of what we're working on right now and talk about some of the changes in marketing and what's coming up. Does that work for you?
Yeah, I think that would be fascinating.
Okay, great. So a few of the things that we're working on, we're a full-service marketing company, so we don't really specialize in any particular industry. And so we range from business to consumer to business to business. Recently, we were retained by a manufacturer distributor in the oil and gas business to update their brand. They have 9 locations. Everybody's kind of been doing their own thing, and they decided they should probably put a little more professional foot forward. So we're doing everything from getting social channels established to writing a brand styled guide, not that we're going to be the branding police, but so that everybody has the same PowerPoint layout and letterhead. And we're writing profiles, and we're updating the website and creating newsletters that they never had. And they've been around since 1956, so they have a lot of people that they can talk to. So that's one of our projects. We're also in the process of creating a brand for a homeowners association who merged the homeowners association with the golf course. So especially out in the Coachella Valley, we've got a lot of gated communities. And as many people know, the golf business has kind of declined over the last few years. And there's a lot of great communities with golf courses, but it's really a stretch to keep those golf courses alive and keep a lot of people on those golf courses. And so a while back, we were approached by this homeowners association to, in order to merge them, the people had to vote and to take it on. And so we helped them with a campaign, and the vote passed. And then they called back and said, now we have to merge all this stuff. Can you help us out? So we're doing everything from creating new logos and writing copy to helping them figure out what their mission, vision, and values are so that we can articulate that, and helping them with their employee brand, because employees are ambassadors to every company. And even though people would put that in the HR silo, that's really in the marketing silo too, because your employees are your ambassadors and they need to understand what's going on and help champion the cause. So we're involved in that. We've got press releases going for a couple of clients. We have bi-monthly newsletters going on. We have a client, I'll call it tchotchkes. Some people call it swag, something we all get. But, you know, that's very impactful these days, especially with all of the clutter from ads and all of the marketing, all, you know, everything that you're bombarded with. So we're working on sourcing stretch bands right now for a client. We have a number of organizations that we work with, which is pretty interesting. And then, of course, Christmas is around the corner, or I should say holiday. And so I'm buying a lot of media for another client for upcoming holiday promotions. And this time, I haven't done it in a while, but this year we are trying cinema, the theater, because Q4 is a blockbuster usually for movies. And what better way to get the word out than when you have a captive audience? And advertising in theaters has changed dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years. So
yes, it sure has.
It's been unbelievable. The things they can do are incredible, and really opens a great door for our client, because they also have digital add-ons that actually kind of, it's almost like stalking, but following people home and representing your ads. So we're pretty excited about that as well. So we have a lot going on these days.
Well, what do you do after lunch, though? I'm just kidding. It sounds like
you
your
mean,
desk
what
is...
What do I
is,
do after 5 o'clock?
That's another story. But it sounds like you've got so many different things going on. Let me ask you something. When you come into a client, like the first client you mentioned, there were a lot of projects going on with all the situations you talked about, but especially the first one, you had everything from branding to the website to advertising and messaging to their employees. Where do you typically think you get the best bang for your buck as a client? What's the first project that's going to make the most sense for them?
You know, that's a great question. When these folks called us in, they said, we were referred in by somebody else, and they said, you know, so-and-so, you know, raves about you. And we at the time, and there's the people that recommended us are still clients, we very narrowly support them. We support them on social media, and we support them with a kind of ad hoc advertising needs. And so these folks called us and said, well, you know, we think we need to do something with branding. We're not quite sure what. We're told you know what you're doing. Can you come out and talk to us? And the more we talked to them, you know, they said, well, you know, we have 9 offices. Everybody has different PowerPoint presentations. Well, letterhead, you know, people are using different fonts. We think maybe we should be in social media, but we don't know what to do. And so there was this whole laundry list of things they had. And I said, you know what? Here's what we need to do. We need to have a plan. Because we could dive in and we could create letterhead. We could dive in. We could do social media. But at the end of the day, we need a plan that includes a priority list of what we need to do. Because we can't get everything done at once. And so the biggest bang for the buck And it takes longer and it's frustrating because it adds time. But the best approach is to develop a plan. And so it took us about 4, maybe 6 weeks by the time we got our arms around all the needs. And then we went back and we made a presentation to them of everything that of the plan and everything that needed to be included if they were to, you know, to really move forward and be serious about updating their branding. And then listed the, here's the first thing we're going to do. Here's the second thing. This is what can be done concurrently. And believe it or not, last but not least is the website. Because they have one. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It works. All this other stuff is a mess. So let's clean up the mess and we'll tackle the bigger stuff, because they were saying, oh, and then you could do the website. And I said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it right away. Let's start with what we can do and build. So that's really the approach we try to take. Sometimes it works. Other times they're anxious and or they have an immediate need and it doesn't work. Yesterday I met with a nonprofit. We've done some work for them before, and they want something very specific. So does a plan work for them? They should have it, but they don't see the need and their focus is different. So, you know, many times you have to follow the what the client needs, but the best approach is really to have a plan.
Yeah, the reason I asked that question was because I was at a meeting myself of nonprofits the other day, and a gentleman was giving a presentation about his nonprofit, just a brief presentation, and on the PowerPoint, on the screen behind him, was the name of his organization and his company's mission statement. And he said, I'm not going to turn around and look. I really can't tell you. I can't cite my mission statement. We just do blank. And I thought, that's not a good thing for, you know, maybe your mission statement needs to be shorter and more memorable, because isn't it real important that the CEO and, of course, all of the employees can recite the mission statement? I've always heard that.
I think it's important, but I think a couple of things. Number one, the mission statement should be memorable, and it shouldn't be so long that people don't know it by heart. And number two, the mission statement and or purpose for the business should really just flow off their tongue, because they should be kind of living it, right? So we don't encourage people for long mission, vision, value statements. Say what your mission is, whether you can, and to dismiss what you've already got on a PowerPoint degrades the importance of your organization in the eyes of your audience. So you've already taken a step back and discouraged them from doing business with you or donating or whatever. I mean, but that's presentation skills 101 too.
Oh, well, I thought so. I didn't think very, very highly of the situation. But I thought, you know, shorten the mission statement. What you do is very important. And, you know, one of the key tenets is of building a culture amongst your employees. Correct me if I'm wrong, is that everybody knows, especially these days with millennials in the workplace, they want to know, what's the purpose behind my work?
Exactly. Exactly. And it should be evergreen, so that it doesn't matter who in the organization is talking about the organization, it makes sense to them as well. Many of these mission statements serve only a certain audience or a certain purpose. They should be evergreen and they should apply to everyone. And they shouldn't be technical. And they really need to be simplistic so that people get it, you know, whether it's to our mission is to improve the health of whatever, or our mission is to be the best because, or our mission is to support X, Y, and Z, needs to be pretty, you know, it needs to be pretty succinct and pretty small. The nonprofit I was with yesterday, their mission is to support and employ and transform the lives of people with disabilities. Plain and simple, mm-hmm. No matter who is talking about the mission, they get it. And you don't have to include your name in that mission. People get what you do. And so
absolutely.
It doesn't have to be long and fancy. It just has to be memorable.
And that,
because
that word picture, and this is what you do, as I understand it, that word picture then is translated into a graphic representation in your logo and your branding materials so that that one supports the other, correct?
Yes, because, you know, a picture is worth a lot of is worth, what's the adage, more than 1,000 words, and that really is true. You know, it's interesting. We do write a lot of copy, and, you know, in today's research is showing that, you know, these big, long blog posts and big, long posts in social channels are getting read more and more uptake and whatever. And that may be good for an audience, but the average person who's getting bombarded with these things, they're looking at copy and sound bites. I don't know how many times people have looked at brochures and said, oh, great brochure, never read a word. But they looked
right.
at the pictures, and they looked at the captions beneath the pictures, and if the pictures and the captions within the pictures or the soundbite sentences make sense to them, they're good, and then they move on. And that's the whole point behind having that kind of propaganda.
Yeah, we've become a nation of headline readers. with all of that, if you were speaking directly to one of our listeners right now and didn't know much about them, what question would you ask them to determine whether they might be a good client for you?
Tell me about your business. Tell me, are you successful? How do you measure success? And what kind of message do you want your audience to learn?
Mm-hmm.
If they're able to articulate that, there's a pretty good likelihood that we can help them. We typically don't work with startups because startups are still getting their footing. And startups
mm-hmm.
really want support in making the decisions about the brand and about the products and moving forward. And in my experience, that's a no-win situation. They kind of have to figure that out. And I get that companies evolve, but they need to figure that out before they decide to put any marketing against that. So, for example, this gas and oil manufacturer and supplier that we have, they've had a reasonable level of success. They can tell me what they told us clearly, what they did and who their clients were and what they want to tell their clients. They just haven't been doing it. So, or in a cohesive manner. They have a lot of salespeople. The salespeople have been, you know, managing the message. They are very, they're spotlighted in their industry and in the industry associations, and that's been good. But they know they need a better message to get more traction for their efforts. And those are the kinds of questions we ask, and that's when they see how we can help them.
Great, great information, Kathleen. Thank you so much for joining me. So I want to point out to our listeners, go to kmcentyassoc.com. I'll spell it out for you. Here you go. kmcentyassoc.com. Check that out, or if you're going on Twitter, it's at Kathleen McEntee. Again, McEntee. And Kathleen, you do a great job helping us understand what you do and how you do it. And it's something that all of our listeners should be taking advantage of. Any last words for our listeners?
It's important to make sure that you're talking to the right audience with the right message. But it's most important that you're talking to them. Don't worry about figuring out getting all the words really clear. Just make sure you're doing something. Then you're out in the market.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you so much for coming on with me once again today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge with our listeners. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. I really enjoyed it. And you have a good day, too.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners. Thanks for joining us once again today. We love to have you with us. Love to have you hear the wisdom and knowledge of our great guests. And my next guest is also a returning guest with me today. He is Patrick Renoisi from SalesBrain, and he's been with us several times. We've covered some interesting ground, I think, Patrick. Thanks so much for joining me once again today.
Hey, hi, Bill. Good to be with you.
Pleasure. We've talked about the persuasion code, the science of human persuasion. We've talked about how people can learn to be to harness that information and all the research that you've done and in your book, The Persuasion Code. I'd love to get deeper on some of that today. I have a particular question to start out with you, and that is, we've talked about how we persuade others. Let's talk a little bit how we persuade ourselves.
That might be difficult, but it's going to be interesting. I was listening in your show, and the previous person was talking about the mission statement. And I have a very, very strong feeling about what the mission statement should include. I mean, I pretty much agree with what the previous person was talking about. I think, however, that included in that mission statement, we need to find the top three reasons why the customer should buy. Because it always starts with the customer, and it always starts with the why. So yes, everything she said is absolutely right. It's got to be simple. It's got to be memorable. And in fact, when we coach customers on how to do that, we include one of the 188 cognitive biases to make sure that the mission statement is easily remembered. And actually, it's actually a bias called the rhyming as a reason effect. So here's what happens. I'm sure you remember the story of O.J. Simpson, right? And he got acquitted when a lot of things were pointing against him. But the defense attorney chose that sentence, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. And
right.
You know it rhymes. And that helps people when something rhymes, when it's really easy to remember, when the music behind the words becomes interesting, people believe it and people remember it more. So in the mission statement, we invite people to include also the top reasons why the customer should buy. And these top reasons should be spelled in a way that makes it either rhyme or that an alliteration, like you repeat the same word three times. And we are really, really adamant that 90% of all mission statements are not properly written.
Yeah, it seems like in some mission statements I've seen quite a few of them in small businesses. They're too long. They just keep going. You know, they keep explaining. They're superfluous. They start off strong, and then they because we do this, because we do this, because we do that. What's an optimal, rhyming is a great idea. What's an optimal length for something like a mission statement, do you think, to be memorable and hold that
yes.
persuasion?
So then the question would be, how quickly can you express the why your customer should buy from you? So let me give you an example. I'm going to give you a brand, and I'm going to ask you, why would people buy that particular brand? We're going to start with the why, and then we're going to see how we can build the mission statement based on that. So if I tell you Volvo, why would people want to buy a Volvo?
Safety.
That's right. And that's what most people would say. You know, 95% of people would associate the brand of Volvo with the concept of safety. And it's because, you know, Volvo has invested about $3 or $4 billion in advertising in the last 60 years to create that memory in your brain. Now, if you're Volvo, your mission statement should be very short. And it should just say, Volvo is the only car company that is 100% focused on your safety. And when you say that, that's the mission statement of Volvo. And it's why? Because there is only one claim. There is only one reason people should buy Volvo, and that's safety. So, you know, Volvo is the most famous example that people typically associate. But when we work with customers, for example, we worked with a law firm in Los Angeles, and their claims are protect your time, protect your dime, protect your peace of mind. Right? That's the three reasons why companies should engage that particular law firm. So we are using different techniques to make it memorable, to make it mnemonic. We're doing an alliteration on the word protect. And then we're using the word you, so protect your time. And then we're using the rhyme in time, dime, peace of mind. So we're using all the techniques in the book to make that memorable, to create a music in it. Because if you remember my first talk, right, I talk about the unconscious brain, or what we call the primal brain. And that brain is not smart enough to understand words, but it will understand the music and the reason behind the words. So that particular law firm, its mission statement should be, we are the only law firm. And that's the beauty of it, is when you create those claims and when they're so unique, you don't really need to have anything unique about your value prop, your product or services. It's only what you say about why people should buy from you that becomes unique. So when they say, you know, we are the only law firm that will protect your time, protect your dime, protect your peace of mind, that's it. That's their mission statement. And that mission statement is equally important for the outside world in order to convince customers to join it, as it is for the internal world when they recruit new lawyers.
Right, right, right. It makes sense. And I think you know when you see it, but I think you also know when you don't see it, right?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, most companies, they say, we deliver fantastic products and services with very high quality. We do that with a high level of integrity, and we've been doing it for a combined total of 400 years, right? And you hear that all the time.
Right.
The problem is, it's not unique. It's not exciting. It's not memorable. And at the end of the day, it's not a clean way to spell out the why the customer should choose you. So I believe that mission statement should start with the why the customer should buy.
Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, how many banks do we see that say we compete on service? You know, it's well, who doesn't? You know, who, right? It's that's not unique. Maybe the first person that said it was unique, and everybody else that came after, it's just blah, blah, blah at some point. And it's, you know, it's getting, Patrick, more and more, there's more and more messaging happening everywhere we look. I mean, we were talking about with the last guest also how one of the programs they put together for advertising is now in the movie theater. You just can't get away, right, from messaging. So it's really important to clear out that space. So what I like hearing from you is that you're not talking necessarily to the person's face. You need to be messaging to that deep down, what do we call it?
Yes.
The lizard brain, right? That is going to remember
the primal
where stories go, the place where stories go.
That's correct. You know, human beings are 10% rational, 90% emotional, and that emotional world that drives our behavior is really our unconscious. So deep down, whatever message you create needs to appeal more to our unconscious than our conscious. So that's why, again, finding a very simple way to express it. I mean, in the case of Volvo, it boils it down to one simple word. It's just safety, right? In the case of that law firm that I was talking to you about, when they say protect your time, protect your dime, protect your peace of mind, at the end of the day, it boils it down to one simple concept of protection. Now, of course, if you're about to choose a lawyer, guess what your unconscious is afraid about? Your unconscious is afraid of losing that lawsuit. So using the concept of protection and repeating it three times in your claims, which means that whenever they talk, they probably state, you know, 100 times a day. The sheer repetition of that concept makes it more believable for the unconscious.
Aha. So the rhyme is carrying the deeper message of protection in that case.
Correct. And again, you know, scientists, psychologists have discovered this. It's called the rhyming as a reason effect. And it's one of the 188 cognitive biases that drives human decision, which, again, is completely irrational. But although we are irrational, scientists have studied the irrationality in our judgments and in our decisions. And so it's really important for people to understand that at the end of the day, all of this can be summarized into one concept, which is that it's our primal brain that drives our behavior. So amazingly enough, you know, if I go back to your original question, which was, you know, how can we change ourselves? How can we alter our own opinion, our perception of the world? Well, we have to be open to use outside proofs, which tells us that our own judgment is completely wrong.
I see.
I mean, there is a truth out there somewhere, no matter what, right? And we have to be open to that truth. But the problem is that we see the world through the lens. I will give you an example, which is possibly the best and simplest example that I can give you. And I do this test sometimes in front of 100 people. I say, I'm going to divide the room into half. Half of the people will be asked to do something. The other half of the people will be asked to do something else. And we are going to be judging how what you know or what you think about something impacts your perception of the world, right? And we ask people to smell a little box. So there is a box, and in this box there is something. They cannot see what there is in there. They can only evaluate the smell, right? And guess what? Although people are going to be smelling the exact same thing, I can prep their brain by believing that what they smell is either really good or really bad. In other words, I can predict that exactly half of the room will give it a really, really bad rating, like, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being a very appealing smell, 1 being an awful smell. Right? I can bias the room, half of the room, to exactly say that that smell is going to be a 1 or a 2. In other words, it's a terrible smell, and the other half of the room will say it's a great smell. And at the end of the day, they're smelling the same thing. So you know what I do? I mean, I'm not the one who did that test, but I've repeated it, and I can do it, right? Mm-hmm. So here is what happens. People were smelling Parmesan. So in that box, there was a really nice Parmesan. It's an expensive, you know, Italian cheese. But half of the room was told, you're going to smell an expensive Italian Parmesan. Everybody rated it an 8, 9, or a 10. The other half of the room, guess what? They were just being told, guess what, guys? You're going to be smelling used socks. So when people believe they're smelling used socks, although they're smelling a really, really expensive Italian Parmesan, everybody rated it a 1 or a 2. And it's like this for everything in our lives. In other words, we don't see an absolute perfect image of the outside world. It is filtered by our own perception and by our own beliefs. And by the way, if you take that to the political situation that we have in our country right now, that explains a lot of things. Why is it that we have half of the people that see the world one way and the other half that see it another way, right? So what you need to do when you want to change your own behavior, you have to clean your own glasses. You have to look at the world the way it really is. You have to eliminate your own biases. And now,
very
it's
good.
Easy to say, very, very, very hardly done, right?
Yeah, because nobody likes to admit that they might be wrong about the way they might be looking at something. That's dangerous. You know, we're in every bit of our life, perception is reality. You know, our own perception is our own reality, and a lot of times we stick to it. So it takes a lot of guts to basically be able to say, hey, maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe I need to look at this a different way.
Because you know why? Nobody wants to challenge an assumption. And there is a very simple reason for that. It's because it forces you to change. And scientists have demonstrated that change, any change, you know, the change could be changing from drinking a cup of coffee in the morning to drinking tea. You know, it's a fairly simple change. Or having to brush your teeth every day, right? Any form of change to the brain is the equivalent of torture. So people don't want to change. So you have to be willing to create that own painful situation for yourself and think that, again, you were smelling Parmesan or you were smelling a dirty pair of socks.
Right.
But that's really difficult. That's really difficult. So that's, you know, this idea is that every perception that we have of the world depends on our own five senses plus everything we know about the world. So the example that I gave you was for what we know about the world. In other words, if I know I am smelling Parmesan, I know that smell is going to be good, right? But our senses are also interdependent. In other words, what people taste, it depends upon what they see or what they hear. And I'll give you an example. This is a test that was done by another set of researchers, and they have people rank the saltiness of oysters. So people were in a room, there were five different kinds of oysters, and they were asked, oyster number one on the scale from 1 to 10, how salty is it? Oyster number two on the scale from 1 to 10, how salty is it, et cetera. And people thought they were there to taste the saltiness. But in reality, what they didn't know is they were doing this test and we were checking the impact of the ambient music in the room. So there were several rooms. And in one of the rooms, there was just no noise. In the other room, they were playing music through the speakers and the sound that they were playing was just the general sound that you hear in a city, like city traffic, sirens going on. In the third room, there was just the sound of the wind, right? So it was like in the forest, and people, and guess what? In the last room, they were playing the sound of waves. And when people hear waves, although they don't know about it because they were not informed that they were doing that, the perception of the saltiness of oysters increases. But the thing is, it is not an illusion. In other words, they put then the people inside an fMRI and they check. And people really perceived that the oyster were more salty just because of what they were hearing. So in fact, there is a whole branch of marketing called multi-sensory marketing. And that's what people study for that.
It's a fascinating world as more and more of you listeners are trying to figure out how you can become different. I mean, I talk to a lot of my listeners, Patrick, and they're saying, you know, one of our biggest problems is how to differentiate these days, how to have more persuasion. You've written a book all about that called Persuasion Code. And more importantly, you're available as a Vistage speaker and, of course, as a consultant for businesses that want to do better in this area. What would people find? Let me ask you this question. What would people find that would be interesting at your website, which is salesbrain.com?
Well, they find information on the four steps that they need to follow if they want to impact that unconscious brain. So, you know, we explain to people, we teach people how that unconscious or primal brain works, and then we translate that into various actions that they need to do to improve their sales and marketing. But again, at the end of the day, every concept can be summarized into the fact that we are not rational decision-making machines. We are emotional decision-making machines. And although we believe that emotions are not predictable, they are, and that's what we do. We teach people a rational way to impact the irrational brain.
It's fascinating. So instead of you listeners out there, instead of hitting your head against the wall, learn how to appeal to the rational brain, to the emotional part of the brain rather, and then it can be justified. Very, very, very interesting stuff. I love your examples. You always break it down for us and make it easy for us to listen to. Do you have a lot of speaking engagements lined up, and how's the book doing?
Yes, so our book, first of all, received the Axiom Publishing Award, so we were very happy with that. And we are now translating it into, yes, thank you. We've got it now in 12 languages. Amazingly enough, the first country in the world that bought our book, guess which one it is? There are two countries that first decided to publish our book locally, and one of them, the first one was China, and the second one is Russia. I think that should make a lot of people laugh right now, right?
Uh-oh.
Yes, I know. In fact, my partner is in China right now, and I told him about the danger of going there, but we're seeing if we can work with people that are not really respecting intellectual property too much, so I'm a little concerned. But so yes, our book is being translated in 12 languages, and we're traveling the world to teach people that how to impact the primal brain.
Well, again, it's called Persuasion Code, and it's available on Amazon. Of course, anywhere else you might find great books. Patrick Renoisi from Sales Brain, thank you so much once again for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I look forward to the next time we speak.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you soon.
All right, and thank you very much once again for joining us today. That's going to do it for our show. Look forward to talking with you again very soon with a great lineup of guests.
Hey, everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.